Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
It's a Wednesday. It's also the 29th day of May. Happy birthday, Lauren, my sister. And I'm Andy Griffin. This is the Andy Griffin Show on KDXU 908. And Jimmy Keston has taken this time. Thank you, Jimmy, for coming and hanging out with us. Jimmy, fresh off the boat. Not that boat. The other boat. The cruise boat.
Right off the boat.
Yeah. Although people on those boats will say, it's not a boat, it's a ship.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh, and happy birthday, Amy, my sister, on the 30th.
Wow, that's cool. So my sister.
Yeah, I don't know if she'll hear this in California, but.
Probably not. My sister today, your sister tomorrow, my dad's birthday is tomorrow as well. My dad will be 89 years old. He's still going strong. So it's pretty cool.
Outstanding.
We're going to talk politics a little bit. I thought it was important that we have our political expert, and Jimmy has qualified for that now for the. I don't know, how long you've been a political expert? A while, huh?
Well, I certainly have been involved in politics in Utah for a while. We've been here almost, we're coming up on 20 years since we arrived in this town. Wow. And we've seen a lot in 20 years.
So I thought we would maybe tap Jimmy's brain a little bit on some of the candidates, some of the races that we want to look at and just kind of ones that affect us here in Southern Utah. I've had quite a few people say, hey, you know, can you give us kind of a lowdown on, and what I don't want to do, Jimmy, is tell people who to vote for.
Absolutely. Everybody's got to do their research.
Right.
I have opinions based on my research. We may share some of them today. We may not. There are people that I'm supporting that we may not say that I'm supporting today, and there's others that we would. But still in all, don't take my word for it.
Yeah.
Do some research and see if you agree or disagree with me.
And part of that research is going to be what we say today and who we talk about today.
We hope to be helpful.
Yeah, take our two bits worth and make that part of your research and who you think you should vote for. Let's start in the governor's office. Spencer J. Cox, Deidre M. Henderson versus Phil Lyman and Natalie Clawson. You made a statement, Jimmy, man, it's been probably a month or so ago, that you felt like Spencer Cox was probably still going to win that, being the incumbent. And we all know, I mean, if you follow politics at all, you know the incumbent wins, I think it's something like 60-something, maybe higher percent of the time incumbents win, because people, a lot of people who aren't informed, Jimmy, go to the polls, they see, yeah, I guess he was okay, and they just click it. They just colored the dot in or whatever. So what are your thoughts on Spencer Cox versus Phil Lyman?
Well, I mean, personally, I like Spencer Cox very much. I know him. I've gotten to know him over the time that he's been both lieutenant governor and governor. Many of his policies have been good, but there are some areas mm-hmm. where conservatives have been frustrated with Spencer Cox. And of the two, Phil Lyman is absolutely the more conservative candidate. He's the more constitutionally focused candidate.
Right.
As a constitutional conservative, I'm most probably going to vote for Phil in the primary, but I'm not going to have it. Spencer Cox is the candidate that, while I have to go with the more conservative candidate in the primary, should he win this thing, which he, like you said, the incumbent often does, I won't have a problem supporting him in the general election, because most of his policies have been good. He has frustrated us a couple times. We had to get an override in order to ban boys from girls' sports because he bowed to the pressure from the left.
No, and I was going to ask you about that. So I read just this morning, I saw an ad online from Phil Lyman, and one of the things he talked about was, well, Spencer Cox would not support a ban on boys competing in girls' sports.
I think he vetoed one of them.
Yeah.
And his
reasoning at the time, he said, well, it's just going to lead to lawsuits if we put this ban in place. That didn't seem like it held a lot of water in my mind. And Phil Lyman, right, that's like one of the first things he'll criticize on Spencer Cox's record. Your thoughts on that?
Well, look, I am the father of a former multiple sport athlete in high school.
Yeah.
And would have been a college athlete had her senior season, track season, not been robbed by COVID. She was class of 2020.
My daughter was as well.
And and so she missed her season, or senior season of track and some of the other, and the summer, you know, things. That all said, she was a very good female athlete.
Mm-hmm.
But she wouldn't beat the boys.
Right.
I mean, her freshman year, she could throw a football farther than the freshman starting quarterback at Snow Canyon. But other than that, I mean, look, she was a great sprinter, great track, did multiple things and was winning against girls. She wouldn't win against boys.
No. And numbers are, it's not like it's controversial to even say that, Jimmy. The numbers are the numbers. And when you have, I did a story yesterday about Jaslyn Gardner out of Enterprise High School, who was competing for BYU track. She ran the 100 meters in 11 flat. It was wind aided, so it doesn't count in the record book, but it would have been a record at BYU.
Yeah.
11 seconds for the 100 meters. That's not even close. That's like a full second behind the record for
the men. The men are going to break 10 every time.
Yeah.
And look, men are physically superior to women on average. Well, and men and women are different.
There's someone out there listening, Jimmy, that's going, hey, I'm going to show them.
On average. Look, there are I've met plenty of women that could kick my butt. All right?
Yeah.
And that's not the point. The point is that those women who could kick my butt because they are, you know, weightlifters or female boxers or something, put them in the ring against a man. They're going to get, it's lights out. Who's trained for that?
Yeah.
Right? So, look, I am absolutely against, there are two genders, men and women. You were assigned your gender by God, and you cannot change your biological sex. And now they're saying, oh, there's a difference between biological sex and gender. Well, look, I believe that gender dysphoria is a mental illness that should be treated, not something that should be supported and celebrated.
And celebrated. So,
and when Spencer Cox vetoed that, I was upset.
Okay.
And
me too.
And that's one of those areas that says that when it really matters, Spencer Cox may not have the backbone to stand up for conservative values.
Did
most of the time he signed, you know, our legislature was pretty conservative, sent him some positive things. Maybe not everything we wanted, right? And he signed most of it. He's right of center.
Right. Barely.
But he's not as conservative as Phil.
Yeah.
Not as constitutionally focused as Phil. So Phil's probably the better choice for those of us who are constitutional conservatives. In the general election, I'll have no problem voting for Spencer against a Democrat.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Should we have... Well, let me ask you this. His argument that, well, the reason I'm not signing this is because it's just going to lead to a bunch of lawsuits and cost Utah a lot of money. Is that a valid reason?
There are times when it's worth it to take a stand. And my daughter's worth it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I agree.
Look, I'm a daughter daddy. You are never going to convince me that it's okay to let men compete against women. And anything that's done to support that is evil.
All right, let's go to Republican for U.S. Senate. We have four. They whittled it down to four gentlemen. John Curtis, Jason Walton, Brad Wilson, and Trent Staggs. Now, here's my kind of general feeling I'm getting right now from what's reaching me, the advertising that's reaching me. Trent Staggs, extremely conservative, even constitutional conservative. Brad Wilson and John Curtis, maybe not quite as staunch conservative, especially Curtis, who has been accused of being a rhino. And then I know nothing about Jason Walton. That's my layman's take of that race. What's your expert take?
Well, you're pretty close. Staggs is the only one that didn't go signatures. And Staggs has President Trump's endorsement.
Okay.
For those of us who are constitutional conservatives, he's the guy. John Curtis is a former Democrat mayor of Provo.
Yeah.
Who the Democrat Party said in an internal memo that got leaked. Mm-mm. So it wasn't in an internal memo that got leaked that wasn't supposed to go public. The Democrat Party named John Curtis as someone they believed could be convinced on their environmental agenda. John Curtis's name, Mitt Romney was also on that list.
Okay.
And John Curtis's name was on that list as someone they believed they could influence on their energy policy and on their environmental policy. I agree with them that he has not been consistently conservative when it matters.
So calling him a rhino is not a stretch.
It's not a stretch. He's been generally conservative, but you know what we have to look at these days is when do they depart? There are thresholds that I think we have to look at as we're analyzing candidates that say, look, there's no perfect candidate, and every candidate has flaws. So we look at those flaws, and if they surpass the threshold of I can't agree with that, I can't condone that, right? Then we have to take a look at what our alternatives are. Mm-hmm. And Curtis just has too many of those. It really comes down to Staggs is the conservative in this race. Wilson would be the second best choice, probably.
Now, what about this Jason Walton guy? I know nothing about him.
I don't know much about him either, and I really don't think I don't think he's going to be a factor in this race. It really comes down to will the Staggs and Wilson portion of the race help or hurt Curtis? Someone's going to sneak in with a plurality in that race.
What does that mean?
In other words, less than a majority of the vote, under 50% of the vote.
All right.
They'll win with a plurality. Someone's going to win with 45% of the vote or 40% of the vote,
right?
Because you got all these candidates in there. You got four candidates in this race.
Three in particular that are probably going to get at least 20%.
Well, and Walton will get something. Whatever he pulls, it's highly unlikely that the winner of this race has over 50%. Now, Staggs was a overwhelming winner at convention.
Right.
Your convention delegates, the people you elected when you went to caucus meeting, overwhelmingly voted for Staggs. Over 70%, I think, if my memory serves correctly. He was one of the strongest candidates. It took several ballots. It was the end of the day. But by the end, he came out way on top. He is the official convention-endorsed candidate.
Yeah.
And President Trump endorsed him. So it's a pretty easy choice. If the next president of the United States wants him in the Senate, that's good enough for me. Plus, like I said, Wilson is right of center. Generally conservative, did a pretty good job as Speaker of the House, right? If Staggs wasn't in the race, he'd be a pretty easy choice against Curtis. He is a pretty easy choice if, you know, for our right of center moderate Republicans, Wilson's a better choice than Curtis.
Is there, are there polls out? Do we know where that race stands right now? Do you know winning?
Polling's tough in these state and local races. I'm sure there is some. I haven't seen any that really tell us where we're at. I think it's going to be a very close race because of how crowded the field is. And I really am not prepared to make a prediction on who wins. But I'm happy to say what I think of these candidates.
Here's an article from about a week ago. Salt Lake Tribune says John Curtis right now is winning that race. That surprises me a little bit. Staggs is second, and Wilson is third.
That's been the concern that conservatives had coming out of the convention, that Wilson would cut into Staggs just enough to let Curtis slip in.
That's a good point, because if you have really moderate kind of center line people in the Republican Party, they're going to lean toward Curtis, and then if you split the conservatives between Staggs and Wilson, then you got a problem.
Right, so as much as I have a lot of friends who are strongly supporting Wilson, and he is a good candidate, I think we need to rally behind the convention candidate in this case and make sure John Curtis doesn't go to the United States Senate. So I'm on that basis alone, Staggs is the better choice, because Wilson probably helps Curtis more than he helps himself in this race.
I want to talk about convention a little bit and about the electorate, and it should matter. It really should matter. You know, you guys picked Celeste Malloy. You guys picked Trent Staggs. You're the representatives for the people. And I know, I guess you're probably a little biased because you're one of the delegates. But
there was no convention winner in the congressional race of Malloy and Jenkins.
Oh, okay.
So neither one of them hit the threshold to be the convention candidate.
But I guess what I'm getting at is, why then, when we go to a general primary and they get their signatures and all these guys get on, why are we sometimes not voting for the one that the electorate's picked, the one that you picked? Why are we not voting for them?
Well, it's really a matter of what we've said all along. The signature pass, SB 54.
Right.
We've talked about it a lot, and we talked about it extensively last time I was on. Right. The signature path to the ballot in a primary is a horrible idea because it turns our primaries into 30-second radio sound bites
and money.
The most money. Right. It becomes money instead of policy and it gives us races like what we have going on in the Senate. We're going to send a candidate to the general election who most likely didn't get a majority in the primary.
Right.
A majority of Republicans likely had not voted for the candidate in the primary. And that's going to be our standard bearer. And that's because we haven't whittled it down to two. And that's what the caucus convention system gives us. When we can't decide on a candidate, when there's not an overwhelming favorite, right, we have the top two duke it out in a primary, and the voters decide. The voters are the ones who elect the delegates, right? These plurality races don't help anyone, but they do allow well-funded people. And let's face it, John Curtis is spending a fortune to get into the Senate.
Yes. Money talks. So basically what seems like is going to happen, might happen, John Curtis might get 40% of the vote. Trent Staggs might get 28. Brad Wilson might get 27, splitting the conservative vote. And Curtis will win, even though the real conservatives in the Republican Party, had they voted for one guy instead of two, would have beaten him easily.
Right. If Staggs wasn't in, Wilson probably would have been the convention candidate. Mm. But with Staggs in the race and with the president's endorsement, you know, he had a strong convention, you know, it really matters when you get face to face with these people. And like I said, I think we need to trust the delegates and rally around the convention candidate in this case.
All right. I wanted to get into Congressional District 2 with Celeste Malloy and Colby Jenkins. We're bumping right up against a break here. Let me read the text first before. Let's see. If I can. Technology sometimes can be so complicated.
And you and I share the same disability, fat thumbs.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Michael sent me this article about Spencer Cox. Says he is not a Trump Republican, but he is also not, quote unquote, woke. I don't believe elections should be decided by sound bites, but I still go back to the Tucker Carlson kind of narrative on Spencer Cox when he addressed the school children and said, I'm a he, him, you know, pronoun guy and stuff. And it's like, why, Spencer? Why did you go there?
That was so unnecessary. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like I said, I like Spencer Cox. He's a good man. He is a genuine man, and he... You know, but he has bowed to the, he's put this olive branch out there that is just unnecessary on areas that are pretty significant for Republicans. And this pronoun thing and this gender thing, mm-hmm. let's face it, it is definitely a major thing for conservative Republicans.
It is.
And people of faith. This gender thing, Europe has already figured out that and has now mostly banned children being butchered in these or given these hormone pills that can destroy their body.
Chemically, change them,
They've figured it out. The research is there. This has been a disaster for people, for kids who've been put through it, and even adults. The American medical system hasn't caught up, and some of our politicians are bowing. And like I said, in a primary, I can't vote for someone who is bowing to the pronoun gender dysphoria crowd.
Woke society, yep. All right, got to get a weather break in. When we come back, we will talk about congressional district for U.S. House District 2, Colby Jenkins and Celeste Malloy. I kind of feel like Jimmy did with the governor thing. You know, whoever wins, I'm okay with that. But I'd sure like another one to win, maybe. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back, 936 on KDXU. We talked a little bit about the governor's race, Phil Lyman versus the incumbent Spencer Cox. And Jimmy and I guess probably if you want to read between the lines, we were both leading Lyman on that one. And then we talked about the Senate race, Curtis, Walton, Wilson, and Staggs. We love Staggs, but we kind of feel like maybe the conservative vote will split Wilson and Staggs, which means John Curtis may be the biggest recipient of that for the more moderates. Let's talk about Republican House District 2, Colby Jenkins and Celeste Malloy. We talked about this about a month ago, but let's go over it again, Jimmy.
There was no one hit the threshold at convention, so there's no convention endorsed candidate in this race. I full disclosure, I endorsed Celeste Malloy because she was my vice chair, my first term as chairman of the Republican Party here in Washington County. I know her. I know her values and her core values and who she is. And while her voting record hasn't been perfect, she's brand new in Congress, and I've endorsed her for a full term to see what she'll do with that full term. And while I would have no problem supporting Colby Jenkins in the general election if he pulls out this primary race, I have an issue with candidates who misrepresent their opponent and their opponent's record. That bothers me. If you're gonna lie to me before we even elect you, what are you gonna do after you're in? What are you gonna do in Washington D.C.? And Jenkins chose to misrepresent Malloy's voting record on some key issues that he thought would help him and probably did for those who didn't dig a little deeper and see that what he was saying was not accurate.
Only part of the truth.
It was only part of the truth.
Yeah.
He does have a couple key endorsements that's showing up on his radio ads.
Mike Lee.
Mike Lee and Mike's friend Rand Paul. A couple of senators trying to, stick their nose into a House race. Most House members don't exactly think that that's good. And, oh, by the way, as Republicans, and especially conservative Republicans, are we really pleased with the Senate Republicans' track record?
No. And
you know, for all the bloviating my good friend Mike Lee and the best senator in the United States Senate, Mike has made some of those votes, too. If there's money in it for Hill Air Force Base, he'll look past the other earmarks and vote for some of these blown-up packages. Now, he didn't vote for the last one, right? It was going to go through. There was a lot of negotiating that went into that package where some key good things came out of it that Celeste Molloy was really in the front of. And that's why Jim Jordan from the Freedom Caucus, one of the most conservative members in the entire House of Representatives,
right,
has endorsed Celeste Molloy. Yeah. Now, he works with her every single day. Mike Lee and Rand Paul don't work with her at all.
Oh.
How much interaction has Rand Paul really had with Celeste Molloy? We don't know, but officially,
probably not much,
yeah, right? He's in the Senate, she's in the House, but Jim Jordan works with her every single day. He's in the caucus. He sees what goes on behind closed doors, and he's endorsed her. And I think that is a powerful endorsement.
Also, it's worth noting, Mike Johnson, right, Speaker of the House?
Yes.
Make sure I get his name right. Anyway, he was on with Celeste talking about that very vote. And although he hasn't officially endorsed her, he has, with his words right here on this show, endorsed her. And he's the Speaker of the House. He works with her all the time.
Exactly. And let's face it, there's no doubt that there has been at least one or two votes that Celeste has made in the couple of months that she's been in Congress. Because remember, she is just filling out, right now she's just filling out the last of Chris Stewart's term.
Right.
And she is brand new freshman going for her own full term. There are probably one or two votes where the Speaker needed her vote, asked her to vote a certain way on a bill, and a freshman congressman, unless it's something atrocious, really atrocious, will sometimes compromise to give the Speaker a vote. And let's face it, in Republican congressional politics, internal politics, you know, it's the Speaker of the House who makes all of the committee assignments. It's the Speaker of the House that decides the direction of your career. He can stuff you on some subcommittee in a basement somewhere where you'll never be heard from again.
and that's kind of literal.
Or you can get the kind of committee assignments that make a difference and allow you to employ your skills. And sometimes you've got to give the Speaker what he wants. That's the way Washington works. I'm not saying I like it. I'm saying it's a fact.
Yeah. All right. By the way, just some dates to remember. The early ballots go out actually in, a week from now. Early ballots are mailed out. Last day to register if you're going to vote in the Republican primary or Democratic, I guess. The last day to register is the 14th of June. In-person early voting begins on June 21st. Last day ballots can be postmarked is June 24th, and the regular Republican primary election is June 25th. Those are dates to remember. We're going to go over some of the other offices in the race. And again, technology's got me. Okay.
One thing that the Washington County Republican Party is saying, that early voting at the Dixie Convention Center actually starts Tuesday, June 18th.
Oh, okay.
From 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Wednesday, the 19th, from 9 to 1. Thursday, the 20th, from 12 to 4. And then Friday, the 21st, from 12 to 4. That's according to the Washington County Republican Party's website.
Okay. But again, the official primary day is June the 25th, when we will eventually learn results, unless somebody shows up at midnight with a bunch of bags of dead people's ballots. But that would not happen in the United States of
America. Well, it wouldn't happen in Utah.
Right.
It certainly has happened in the United States of America. It is standard operating procedure in Chicago.
Yeah.
Has been going on that way for 50 years.
Either that, or they'll put you in some cement shoes and you get to go swimming in the Lake Superior.
And, of course, Election Day is also the deadline for mail-in ballots.
Yes. All right. We'll be right back with more races and some of the names involved after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Jimmy Kesson has been so kind as to join us today to talk politics here on the Andy Griffin Show. Jimmy is how long have we known each other, Jimmy?
It's been
5 years at least.
Oh, more than that.
We've
known each other well the last five. We became friends in the last 5 years, but we've known each other longer.
Yeah. So, Jimmy, when I very first got this job 5.5 years ago, one of the first things I wanted to do was start attending Chamber of Commerce. And Jimmy and Fred Walker, the two guys, that very first luncheon I went to, the Jimmy and Fred came, "Hey, how's it going?" You and Fred were very kind and nice, and I appreciate that.
And I was one of your early first guests when you got this gig.
That's right. And now you can catch Jimmy every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 7:25 a.m. as we talk politics, not usually local politics, more national politics, but
there's usually more going on the national scene, and you know, there's usually when stuff happens locally, we talk about it. But
all right, let's talk a couple of other races. We're down to about 10 minutes, so let's start with Attorney General Derrick Brown, Frank Mylar, and Rachel Terry. What do you know?
So Mylar did well at the convention and is considered the conservative in this race. Okay. Derrick Brown's a friend of mine. Again, full disclosure, he was the chairman of the state Republican Party that cleaned up the mess that Rob Anderson left. And I was on his executive committee of the state party those 2 years. When I was on the state central committee, and then I was on his executive committee. So I worked side by side with him cleaning up the mess that was left behind by Rob Anderson. And I was impressed. So
Derrick Brown gets things done.
He gets things done. He is someone who I trust. And that's a big deal. I don't know Frank Mylar well. And I have tried to get face-to-face with him and haven't been able to do it. Even at the convention, he was so busy, I was not able to get face-to-face with him. I still, like I said, he is a conservative. Derek wasn't in the race, he'd be an easy choice. Right? If you see the people lining up behind Rachel Terry, she's certainly being the establishment is lining up behind her.
Okay.
I think Derrick Brown's my choice in this, only because I know him and I trust him, and this is a position where ethics and trust are very, very important.
Attorney General.
Mylar, take a close look at Mylar also. I think though either one of those two would be a good candidate.
And I would say just a layman's perspective, Mylar seems to be spending quite a bit more money. We are running Frank Mylar commercials. And again, if you hear a commercial on KDXU for any of these candidates, these are paid for. These are bought commercials. You know, their campaign came up with money to get them.
And they pay full price. I know from had a brief political career in Utah, and there is no discount for political ads on any radio station because they have to treat everybody the same.
Exactly. Yep. All right. State Auditor Tina Cannon, Ricky Hatch. What do you know?
Tina Cannon is my choice. She's effective in a position that what you need is competency, she'll do a good job following Frugal Dougal.
Got it. State Senate, Chad Benyon, Don Ibsen. This one is getting interesting. All over my Facebook feed, I'm getting he said, accusations thrown back and forth between these two guys. What are your thoughts?
Well, again, this was a race that was very, very disappointing to me because Mr. Benyon has decided that the way he wants to get into the state Senate is by lying about his opponent. Mm. We talked about this with Colby Jenkins. Colby Jenkins, you know, there was little bits of truth in what he was saying, but it was misrepresenting Malloy, and that's why I endorsed Malloy. Mm-hmm. But Benyon has been outrageously dishonest.
So not even bits of truth.
Look, Don Ibsen almost saved Dixie State University's name. Mm-hmm. He had the votes in the Senate. He worked his butt off to move a couple of votes up north who couldn't care less about Dixie State but would have easily voted for what the establishment wanted. He got those votes, and then when Lowry Snow flipped his vote in the House, he lost those votes because they said, hey, if your own guy won't vote for it. And we knew we were going to lose in the House. I mean, when the name change came up, we knew we were going to lose in the House anyhow, even without Lowry's vote. But when Lowry flipped his vote, that cost us the couple of votes in the Senate.
Wow.
That had, and they, what they told Don basically is, hey, if you're one of your own guys in the Sunshine Caucus is voting for the name change, we're not going to expend political capital on this one.
Yeah.
And then because at that point we were going to lose, Don signed on to the bill in order to get the Dixie Heritage portion of the bill into the bill, which is there, which says that Dixie State must invest in, or excuse me, Utah Tech must invest in the Dixie Heritage.
So Benyon is outright saying it's Ibsen's fault.
Yeah,
and he was the ringleader in changing the name.
Exactly. He's building a campaign saying that Don Ibsen was in favor of the name change, and it's just not true.
Hmm.
It's just not true.
It's not true.
Don Ibsen worked his butt off to save the name, and when he couldn't save the name, was able to use his influence to get the Dixie Heritage portion of the bill in it. That was not there. Dixie State would be gone even from the campus had it not been for Don Ibsen.
That's actually really enlightening, because if you believe the ads you see, if you believe the posts on social media, it would be easy to go, oh, wow, I didn't know Ibsen was behind the name change, because that's what Benyon wants you to think.
And Don's not the kind of guy who's going to be, you know, saying this. And look, I really like Don Ibsen. He's not a great public speaker. You know, he is a very effective senator, but he's not a great public speaker in getting his points across, you know. But he'll win this primary, and he should.
Okay, we got 3 minutes left. Republican for State School Board, Joanne Brinton versus Kristen Norton.
No, both ladies are solid Republicans. They're both great people. Norton is a school teacher, and she has lined up with the establishment a little too often, for my taste, siding with teachers instead of parents. I think we need, my vote's Britain, and she's a solid conservative who is actually focusing on defending parents' rights where education is concerned and the curriculum. And I just don't think that Norton has been aggressive enough in fighting those battles for us. Like I say, nothing against her personally, nothing against her as a candidate, but Britain's the better choice because she will focus on parents' rights.
A lot of people would say, I'll be devil's advocate here, say, well, we need a former teacher in a position like that because they know
she's what's a current really teacher. Going. She's not a former teacher. She's a current teacher.
So we need someone that knows what's really going on in schools. What would you say to that?
Well, it's an interesting argument, but she's also the one doing what's going on in school. And, you know, push come to shove, is a teacher going to vote defending their own interests or defending the parents' interests? And there have been some difficult ones that I just don't see Norton really defending the parents in this.
All right. Well said. And I actually am working on putting together a show to have those two on at the same time, or at least on the same show. I don't know if I can get them on at the same time and have them debate, but at least get them
I think
on.
It's great. Look, this is an important race. School board gets overlooked, but they make decisions at the state school board level that our local school board can't override.
Right. Right.
And our kid, and I tell you what, most of our problems in this country right now can be traced back to a failing education system that doesn't teach civics, that doesn't teach what a constitutional republic looks like. We got a bunch of uneducated voters out here who got no idea.
True.
Because they haven't been taught civics. History.
I wish we had, and maybe on Friday morning we can talk about this. Louisiana State School Board voted that it's required that all schools have the ten. Every classroom in Louisiana has the Ten Commandments posted on the wall. Required this. It's an interesting thought because, of course, we're in favor of the Ten Commandments, but on the other hand, are we in favor of them forcing them to do that? It's good the subject to debate, but we don't have time today to do it, Jimmy. Just a little teaser there for Friday morning, maybe.
Well, anytime.
He's Jimmy Kasten, a great member of the, I call him a member of the KDXU family, a great contributor here on KDXU. And by the way, Jimmy does a sermon every Sunday morning at 7 o'clock. And
religion and politics, my two favorite topics.
Arise and shine. You can catch Sexy. I think it starts at 7:05. But great stuff. And Jimmy,
we're teaching through the book of Hebrews right now.
Love it. Thank you, Jimmy, for being on. Appreciate you today.
Outstanding. Thank you so much.
All right. Got to run, folks. Thanks for listening.